Hey, it's me, Jamie Waxman, and this is the Hot Socks podcast. It is about sex, but I like to use the word socks because I'm a big fan of large, long, lovely socks. Today we take the podcast on the road because that's what we can do when we use our computer to podcast. Very exciting stuff. And I am sitting in the home of Vanessa Pinto, who is also known as the Fleur de Lis. She's here in San Francisco. And for one whole year, she documented her sex life on the blog Whatever You Desire. Fleur de Lis, SF.com, which is FLEURDELISSF.com. It's getting harder to get websites, so I understand where that comes from. Anyway, she did a whole year of her life on a blog where she decided she was named by the San Francisco Bay Guardian as the SF's sluttiest blogger. That was in 2010. She also blogs for the SF Weekly, and she's a contributing writer with Whore Magazine. And you can read her posts now on the Huffington Post as well. Very exciting. She has a book due out later this year and a BA in political science from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, just in case you wanted to know where her background was or what she was doing. Because also, I just found out, Vanessa, thank you for being on the Hot Socks podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
So you came to San Francisco to go to law school?
I did. I came here a few years ago to come to law school. I took the LSAT, and I actually got accepted to two schools. And friends of mine who were graduating from law school weren't getting jobs. And that's scary when you're about to take out $100,000 in loans. And out of nowhere, I actually started a blog as a joke to highlight all of this sexual stuff that I'd been doing. And people started to read it that weren't my friends. And it got picked up by the San Francisco Bay Guardian after a month.
When you say you started it as a joke, what kind of joke were you thinking?
It was just a joke in the sense of it was never supposed to go anywhere. It was just, I used to tell these stories at dinner parties. And my friend was like, well, we can't all go to your dinner party, so why don't you write them down? And then we can read them. And it was mainly for my friends at first. And then they started passing it along. And then people started emailing me. And then it became this, well, maybe I could have a blog. And maybe I'll take a year and do a bunch of stuff and then talk about it. And so then I just made a list of all these different things. And it's amazing the things that you'll come up with when you're doing it for science and research. I was like, yes, I need to go to this sex party, or I need to try this contraption and then write about it.
So how did you start? You said you were going to dinner parties and telling your stories, but how did your story start? You came to SF, you didn't go to law school, and then...
Yeah, I was working for attorneys. I'm a paralegal, I still am. And I was just working for lawyers and figuring out if I wanted to go to law school. And I always was very sexually curious. I mean, my whole life. I was never...
When did you start being sexually active, whatever that means to you?
I was a theater kid in high school. And that's like, that was about the time that Madonna's Sex Book came out. And so it was a different time. I experimented with sexuality, with being bisexual, with doing different things sexually. They're just very open, you know? And so I never put actually a ceiling on what you do sexually, because there wasn't one. I mean, people were crazy. They did all these things. So as I got older, what I learned is that those are not things that we talk about in public. That's what you do, and then that's it. And you have your real life, and those are things we don't discuss. Then I moved to San Francisco, and I'm like, people talk about this here? And they put it in the newspaper, and people want to read it. I'm like, this is great. So suddenly, I didn't have to not talk about it. But I had to write under a pen name because I was a paralegal at the time. And so I wasn't sure what the backlash would be. And there was backlash.
Well, I want to talk about the backlash, but first I want to go back to the first, what was the first party or sexy thing that you did when you got to SF?
It was a couple, married couple friend of mine had come from San Luis Obispo, and they were going to Kinky Salon, and I had no idea what it was. And it was during Pride. It was their San Francisexual party. And it was just, I remember you were supposed to come in costume, and I bought my first boa and I went in lingerie. And I had no idea what a sex party or a sex club in terms of that would look like. I'd been to private ones, but I'm like, what are these that you go to and you pay to? You know, what's this about? So I went, and it was really fun. I mean, so much of it was just interacting with people. And then at the end of it, I had this great time with this couple in the back. And that kind of fueled it. Because then I realized, well, if this is this, then what else is there? I'm sure there's a lot more. And so that was it. I just went in search of all the different things I could do.
And Kinky Salon, which has been an established sort of party. I don't like to call it a party, gathering maybe, right. sexual gathering. For years, I had, when I lived in San Francisco my first time, my New Year's 2003, I was at Kinky Salon. And I, what I remember more is, I'm actually very shy when it comes to like public sex and things like mm-hmm. that. I'll do it with a partner, but I'm not really an exhibitionist or... Right. And I remember the, my memory of Kinky Salon is actually leaving and it was raining and I couldn't hail a cab.
Oh no.
And it was New Year's Eve and I was in a white dress and I was so sad.
Oh no.
My friends had all left and I was sitting on a couch with a guy who we started talking about a sheep dream he had. And then I was like, I need to get out of here. I liked him a lot. We went on a date afterwards. And then the irony was I go to Burning Man, which is a very San Francisco sort of, I feel like it has a very San Francisco undertone. And years later I'm on the playa at Burning Man. This was 2003. This was now 2007 or 8. I think it was 8. No, actually 8 or 9. And some guy stops me and asks me what an art project is. It's these long lights of balloons. And he says, what is this? And I said, oh, it's these balloons on a fishing rod with LED lights. I had worked on the project, so I knew. And he's like, Jamie? And I couldn't, I still can't remember his name right now. I want to call him Doug, but which I think it is. But he's like, I'll never forget that voice. And then I looked at him, I go, you're the sheep guy from Kinky Salon, aren't you?
You're the sheep guy.
I mean, which sounds so wrong anyway.
That doesn't sound right.
Sheep vagina is the closest to real vagina. So you have that whole sexual connotation there. And he was like, oh, my God, yeah. And it was this weird reconnection years later. It was a sunrise. Right. So Kinky Salon really set you off. It was...
It did. It just kind of started the search because that's when I wanted to know what else there was. You know, what is the sexual subculture in San Francisco? And that's really what the blog became about. I got the name from LA Confidential because the
call girls, I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, the call girl service was Fleur de Lis, and whenever they picked up, they said, whatever you desire. And that's what the year became. It became whatever I desired. And then the things that I looked at that I wasn't interested in, like animal role play, people that did animal role play, that was a huge thing. I didn't get into that personally, but I was fascinated with what it is. And also, my audience became to sort of come to me as this window. And I think they related to me because I was an average girl who graduated from college and kind of just started this journey. So they would start to look at all these different things. And also, people who were curious about different things would read me because I'd run the gamut. I did the coffin fetish, the fear fetish, where they lock you in a coffin in a bridesmaid's dress and completely pin you down. They completely lock you in, they shut it. And that's a fetish for the person that's in there and the person that's outside of it. So I would, yeah.
And what, I'm just trying to figure out how, so why a bridesmaid's dress?
Oh, excuse me, a bride's dress.
He okay.
He put you in a bride's dress, he put you in a wedding dress. Because that was his fetish for whatever reason.
So you were doing this for this particular person.
Right. They run a company in Sacramento, and I want to remember the name, and I'll get it to you, but I can't remember it. And essentially, they do everything in terms of fear fetishes, coffin fetishes, burying someone fetish.
So fear of dying on your wedding day.
Right. Maybe that's what it is. I think more of it, it's or killing your bride or kill your wife dying or falling in love with the bride that dies. I don't really know. All I know is that they're into it. Like they'll pick you up at the airport in a hearse, put you in a coffin, and like they're actually going to do a full live burial at one point because someone wants to be buried alive. And like they have the cameras and it's all very safe and done. But so when I went, I'm like, you're shitting me, you know, and I walk into this house and it's got false trap doors and it really is a house of fun. So I was like, okay, I have to know what's the deal with the coffin. And he's like, well, if you want to get in it, you have to do the whole thing with me, you know? And he's like, I'll let you know, not the sexual part, but he's like, you have to go through why I do this. So he puts me in this wedding dress and they handcuff you. They pin you down. Your legs are cuffed. Your arms are cuffed. So you're completely in. You can't get out. And he gives you a bouquet that you hold. And then they put little shoes on you, and then they shut it. And it didn't freak me out when he shut it. It didn't freak me out. I was like, okay, this is nice. It's dark. It's cozy. What most people don't know is all coffins are built the same way, and they lock the same way. And it's this turn lock, and it has to turn 13 times until it locks, and then it completely seals all the air out. So as you're in it, he hits this button, and you're in a living room, and it starts to lower, and you just start hearing click, 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 and that's when it freaked me out.
Wow.
He got to the seventh turn, and that's when I'm like, open it! And they opened it immediately. I mean, you know, but that was when I realized that was the fear. I knew nothing was going to happen, but hearing yourself get locked into something, that was when I was like, oh, no, no.
And I mean, really, how well do you know this person?
Exactly.
That's like locking you into a box. I wonder how long you can breathe in a coffin.
8 hours. They've tested it.
Wow.
8 hours they've spent the night in there. They put a camera and a mic and someone's, you know.
And someone stayed awake while they tested it.
Exactly.
And how did you meet? Did these people contact you on your blog?
No, actually, the funny thing is people along the way, I've made friends with different people who have been like, I want to show you something that most people have never seen. And so they'll take me and then they'll let me write about it. And yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just different people saying, this is what we have here and this is what we have here.
So if people want to show you stuff now, they can find you on Twitter too, right?
Oh, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter.
What's your handle there?
Florida Lee. But if you actually Google slutty blogger, that you'll always get me.
Are you the first name that pops up?
I am.
That brings up another, I mean, I'm really going to go back to some of these other experiences, which we will over the course of this podcast. But the word slut, I mean, there's been the slut walk. There's been this whole backlash with Rush. I don't even want to say his last name around the term slut and birth control and everything. There's two things that come to mind here for me. How did you embrace and give yourself permission? Because I think that's really hard for a lot of women, especially to say, I like sex or I'm curious about sex and I want to be able to explore my sexuality. So you said you came from a theater background. Was that where your permission came from? And then how do you embrace the word slut?
You know, it's an interesting question. For me, my permission, it came right after I got fired for being the slutty blogger. And all of a sudden, I had to make a decision of, what have you done? Like, you could just be going to law school and being a normal person. What have you done? And then all of a sudden, I went, no, this is wrong. And this is why I wanted to be a lawyer, because I wanted to change things. And so that was when I gave myself permission to put my name on it. And completely come up and say, yes, I did this and I wrote about this and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I'm educated. I'm careful. I'm not harming anyone. These are all consensual adults. So what's the big deal? Why is it so shocking that I'm a woman and I talk like this? That really shouldn't be all that shocking. And then the second part of it was
about the word slut.
Oh, I love the word slut. I think it's a great word. I think that words are used in a negative way. And when you take them back, it's very refreshing. I write for Whore magazine. That's a feminist magazine. And they named it that to take it back. Most women are terrified of being called a bitch, a slut, or a whore. And if you take all those three words and re-embrace them, they're very empowering. I don't mind. I am San Francisco's sluttiest blogger. It's a compliment. It's not just something people yell at you when you walk and down the street anymore, you know? So no, I like it. I mean, for years I didn't. It took a while, but now it's like, I'm very proud of what I do. I'm very proud of my lifestyle. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think, now your name is your name. Is that correct? So what happened when you came out with your family?
Well, I had been slowly doing it with my family. My father passed away a few years ago, and so I think that was partially why this was easier. I don't know. I honestly don't know if I would have done it had he still been alive. But the rest of my family, it just kind of, they were like, this is very you. And I always questioned authority. I always questioned the system, which is why I wanted to be an attorney. So in a strange way, they were like, this is just very reminiscent of what you do.
Has it opened up to where family has come to you with more sex questions or?
No, we're Hispanic. No, you know, some people were Catholic. I was raised Jehovah's Witness. Like, we don't go down that road. But it's just more good for you. You know, it's like, good for you, you know. That's what my aunt, you know, in her 70s, good for you. And only in San Francisco. I hear that a lot. Only in San Francisco.
It's one of the reasons I was actually afraid to move to San Francisco, saying, like, I'm pretty vanilla. I will try almost anything. And I'd like to try things, too. So people invite me. I mean, I once did a splashing video with my friend Abby, who was asked to be thrown pies at. And the guy was like, she didn't want to go alone. So I went and I wound up videoing it. And I loved the experience. Like, it wasn't something I needed to do, but I was fascinated. This guy loved the Three Stooges when he was a child. And that's how his pie fetish came about. So that kind of stuff really intrigues me. But I mean, did you do most of this alone? Like, did you always phone a friend or someone know where you were at?
Sometimes, but no, I've always been pretty fearless and I've always had a very good sort of keen sense of people that comes with working in a law office for 10 years. And so any sort of creep factor and I wouldn't even get close to it because usually you can tell on the phone. There were certain parties I'd go into and be like, nope, and out the door. So I was always just very well aware, and I was raised by men. I was raised by my dad and my brother, and I was raised around men. So I have a very different awareness of things, and I'm just, not much. It takes a lot to actually freak me out. I'm usually pretty fearless about certain things.
So you said you're pretty fearless. What has freaked you out? Has there been...
You know, mainly the armory, there were certain sets at the armory, like the device bondage. And it wasn't really that it freaked me out. It would make me jump. Some of the stuff that they did over there in terms of pain. Because I like to play with pain and I like to play with BDSM, but not really. I'm totally a pussy at it. You know, it's like I like little things, but I can't go too far. But I like to watch. So I go to device bondage where they literally build a set around two girls and they put them in all of these compromising positions and they, you know, torture them essentially, consensually. And it's a trip. Like those were the ones where I would just be standing there and like, oh my God, you know, fish hooks, and they'll play with fear things. And it's just, yeah. I mean, they had them on these fucking machines where they don't control the power. And it's like, oh
yeah. I tried that once too. That part, the Sibian and this other person controlled the power, and I was finally like, I will not let that happen
no,
again.
No, I don't know.
I couldn't walk the next day.
You're like, this is not fun.
I'm like, you know, it's weird. I'm like one of these people who will basically say, you know, I need more secrets.
Right.
But there was like a time last year where my pussy was vibrating regularly, and I was like, has anybody else ever had this happen? And that's how I felt after riding a Sibian. I was like, I don't want this again. I don't want this.
Exactly. It is. It's, yeah. I still haven't gotten on one because they just, I'm like, I think I'm good.
It is definitely an interesting experience, but I feel like if I continue to use that much power, it would definitely change my relationships with bodies.
Yeah. I mean, the Hitachi, I think, is the closest I get. God,
and that's
that
powerful.
Machine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really powerful. So
that's powerful.
So before you came to San Francisco, what would you have said was the, I don't like the word crazy, but I'm thinking craziest thing you'd had done, or, you know, really.
That's, you know, that's the thing. None of this was really, in terms of the sex, all that new. I'd always gone to sex parties, always had threesomes, okay. Public sex. Yeah, I mean.
When did you know you were bisexual?
High school, theater. I mean, that was the thing. It wasn't even bisexual. People just experimented. It was just something we did.
Do you label yourself now?
I would say that now, if I had to label myself anything, it would be queer. Because I don't necessarily date women, although I wouldn't rule it out. I have sex with women. I mainly date men. But I mean, I have sex with men and women. I usually have relationships with men. So it's like, I think I would more identify with queer than anything else.
So in 2010, you were named Sluttiest Blogger.
Mm-hmm.
And your blog started in 2010.
In
2000.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. So you did it from 2010 to 2011.
Right.
That year, you probably didn't get into many relationships, or I'm making assumptions here.
Actually, oddly enough, I ended up dating three people seriously during that time, which was very odd for me. And they all knew, and it was just, yeah, it's interesting when you date someone who's a writer and who's writing about their sex life for a year. Yeah, it's strange. I've actually grown a lot in terms of my dating now and how I screen people and what I do. Because I still write, and I still have a blog. Whatever You Desire is still there, along with the other two that I do for SF Weekly and the Huffington Post. But I just don't write about my personal sex life anymore, unless the story merits it. Like in Vegas, I had a great story and I had to write about it. I was like, no, this
was, when was this and what was it?
It was for the AVNs, and I was in this room and I ended up having sex with Miss International Leather. And I remember, I'm like, she fucked me so hard. I'm like, I went silent and just like saw color for a minute, you know? And I'm never silent. So it was really great. I just remember, I'm like, oh, God.
So that was a good fuck.
Oh, yeah. She knew what she was doing. I was like, I don't know what you were doing down there, but things were happening. So,
what color did you see?
Red.
Interesting. That reminds me of an old Warren song, Jenny Lane, rest in peace, I saw red. Anyway, okay, so that totally threw me off as to what I had been asking, because now I'm envisioning. I think I met Miss International Leather.
Sarah Vibes.
Yes, I do know Sarah. I thought that's who
she's
you were talking
great.
About.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
So this is a good, you know, if you run into Sarah Vibes, who's also on Twitter, and you want a good fucking, I guess that's a... So So how did you navigate the relationships? You said, what I was thinking when you were saying this was, it is something that I feel like is a natural progression for people who blog. I started my blog in 2003. I wasn't thinking about anything except I was living here. My friends were in New York. I took my name. I wrote a blog, tell them what I was doing every day. So right. I had a journal of my life. And then that became my website and everything else. And at some shift in like 2006, when I was still writing about my relationships, I shifted to be like, it's hard to date regularly when people can go and look at what you're saying about them.
Your archives.
Yeah, you know, and you might not have said that to their face, but you said it in the writing. And so now I have shifted most of my writing to be about others as well.
It's too hard. It was definitely hard. My rule with that was, the audience would somewhat get an intro to them, but then they were off limits. Like, the people I dated were just off limits. I would try very hard not to write about them. But, you know, it was interesting. They were three very different men, very different. You know, one was military, one did porn, one was a lawyer. You know, so all different walks of life.
Was one, which would you say was, like, the most favorite?
Most favorite, sexually or just personality-wise?
Like, I think military, and I'm like, I love enforcement. It's horrible. I love people in enforcement positions.
Yeah, you know, I do too. It would have been actually nice had he actually been able to enforce. He was the most cowardly man I ever had.
No way!
Great misfortune of dealing with. Yeah, he was unfortunate. He was the cowardly lion. That's essentially like where, and it's funny because one of his favorite movies was The Wiz. And when we broke up, I was like, I could see why you relate to that movie, bastard. You know?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because he was a liar. He did this whole, like, I'm very, like, proud of you. And I'm, like, proud of our relationship. And he lived in Sacramento and I lived here. And essentially, you know, he came out with me, met all my friends and did this whole thing. And then basically told no one. And I didn't exist outside of this city. And so one day I had posted something on Facebook on his page that was like innocuous and he took it off. And I was like, why'd you take that off? And he's like, I can't have people knowing what I do. My family and my friends are on this. I can't have them knowing what I do in San Francisco. And I was like, oh, that's great. Yeah, we're done. You know, I mean,
wow. Yeah. So done. How long had that lasted?
For a few months. And it was really, I mean, he was at my house like every week. I mean, that was, even my friends were betrayed at that one because they were like, oh my God, like he came in and truly, I think that's when I realized that I get a lot of tourists. I get a lot of people who want to cruise through my life and see how cool it is and go through a zoo like experience. And so I no longer date tourists. I no longer date. What did Nina Hartley call them? Civilians.
Oh, yeah. That's what they call them in porn.
Yeah. I don't date civilians anymore. It's like they have to be in the sex positive community. They have to somehow be related to this because if not, it's too hard.
It's a good point. It's funny. The first time I heard civilians, I was shooting a movie. It was 2009. And this porn star on the set was like, star, performer. I don't even know why they're all called stars.
Right.
She was like, oh, yeah, my boyfriend's a civilian. And I thought, oh, my God, she was in the military before she did porn? This is a great story. And I went around telling everyone this porn girl was in the military. And then someone stopped me, and they're like, no, that's the term for outsiders in the porn industry. I'm like, oh.
Exactly.
So how do you – I mean, hilarious. It's for me, it's actually a big red flag when someone's like, oh, my God, you work in sex. That's so exciting. And I'm like, you're probably not someone I want to date. Versus someone who's like, I don't care what you do. Is that – how do you figure out now who's a tourist?
Well, that's the thing. Tourists, exactly that. They're always very excited. They always kind of want to know things. They usually haven't experimented. And suddenly you're this gateway to the reality that they've wanted. And then the problem is when you take those walks, you have to be prepared. I mean, in my year, I never once thought about all the shit that was going to come out. In that year, you learn about yourself. You start playing with BDSM and different things. You learn about yourself. And you have to be prepared for that. And so sometimes tourists, the bad thing is that after it happens, then they go to this place of shame. Of, I can't believe I did this because sex is so shameful in our society. And so then at that point, no matter what, you're that person that took them there. And so then there's that negative energy towards you. So for me now, if you're not in my immediate community or, you know, the community at far where I know where you've come from in terms of this lifestyle, I don't even bother. There's just no point.
So you say, and it's very true, that when you get involved and you get into different communities in the kink world, the queer world, do you consider yourself poly?
You know, it's yes and no. I'm more, I like to use the word open because I've never worked in a relationship where I've been in love with multiple people. But then again, I've always had multiple people in my life that I've loved friendship wise. And now at this stage of my life, a lot of my friends that I'm good friends with, we also have sex. And there is a love relationship there.
Is it awkward, though, being good friends and having sex?
You know, no. That's the great thing about this community. Because no one's a tourist and everyone kind of understands the way that it works, you've kind of dealt with your issues and you're doing this because you want to. That's the nice thing. There's no more unhealthy sex. Like, I don't have unhealthy sex anymore. I still have casual sex or relatively casual sex with people that I may not know very well, but I know enough about them substantially in their background.
What's your definition of unhealthy sex?
Sometimes, like when I was younger and I was into the sport fuck of conquering and having like casual sex, these were not men that I even truly liked or would have really a conversation with. I liked fucking them, but that was it. And so I think to a certain extent, that was more like about control and trying to figure some other things out that were going on with me. Whereas now, the people I have sex with, I really enjoy as people. So when we have sex, it's just different. You appreciate them in a different way. But that's what you're doing, essentially, is you're just appreciating another human being.
You also said that you learned a lot about yourself when you put yourself in this position of really exploring yourself sexually, your sexual health, your pleasure. What did you discover about yourself that you might have been, was there anything you were surprised about?
Yeah, when I started playing with BDSM, I learned a lot because you have to negotiate when you do BDSM, and I'm naturally a bottom. I like to be topped.
Me too.
Yeah, because I'm a very controlling person in my everyday life. I control everything, you know, in my life and my business. So what I learned and what I didn't realize is that sexually for years, that's my like greatest escape. I call it adult scream therapy. You know, when I was a kid, I used to love to go to amusement parks. And I remember my dad would always be like, why do you scream so loud? I mean, I know it's exciting on the roller coaster, but and now as I'm older and I scream in my sex life, I realize it's a release. That's really what I'm looking for. There were times like when I would be stressed and I'd drive in my car and I'd park where no one could see me and I'd just scream in my car. And there's something that comes with that. So now, like, there are certain people sexually I will look for where I'm like, it's been a long week. And I think that I could have some fun with you, where I know that they could just throw me around, pull me by the hair in a very safe way. But I don't really have to do anything other than show up, you know, and it's great.
You're teaching me so much about me. Like, I realize on a roller coaster, I'll keep my mouth shut. Like, my friends try and get me to scream more and like emote more. And like, Corey Silverberg, who's an amazing sex educator, he has gotten on the phone with me and is like, let's breathe and let out really loud breaths. And I'll let out a breath that's high. And he's like, no, low in your, like, that is really difficult for me. And,
really?
Yeah.
To scream. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. And like on a roller coaster, to me, it was tough it up and shut up. And I think that's actually something from growing up. Like, my mom has got a real high tolerance for pain, and it was like, suck it in. But I had not really thought about that until just the second. Wow.
Well, and that's the thing. You take a walk, and with BDSM especially, you start to look at what you play with sexually and realize where it comes from, you know, and why you do it. You know, I am very in terms of like every day, I don't really like being touched a whole lot by strange people. I don't like being manhandled. I don't like falling or injuring myself. But sexually at times I like very aggressive, rough, fucking throw you against a wall, slam you around sex. For that time and that space. And there's something about being able to get all of that aggressiveness out and all that pent up aggression that you keep up during the week when you're dealing with things and people and business, and you have to do that face. And it's like, that's my time where I don't have to do that face. Sex is my time.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Wow. So if someone was listening to this and thought, well, you know, BDSM was sounded of interest to them, and they were like, really, if they were in San Francisco or not in San Francisco, what advice would you give someone about starting out, like finding their thresholds or what might turn them on?
Well, first of all, I was very lucky. I went on FetLife.com and I met a dominatrix named Lady Ripley, who I'm still very good friends with. And she was my introduction. And it was great because the problem is, if you have the wrong introduction, it could severely traumatize you. There are some sick people in this world. So first of all, be very careful with who you play with. and always know that you can play with them. With her, it was never an issue. Like, she was just, we had a list that went back and forth of what I wanted, what I didn't want. The first time we played, you know, she went through all the parameters, and it's a trusting thing. So that's the thing. The main thing is really, really connect with someone on a trust level before you ever let them do anything to you. Because at that point you're going to be tied up. You're going to be blindfolded. You could potentially be on some sort of object. You want to know that that person is trustworthy and that they're going to comply with the standards you had set up. So mainly do your research, but FetLife.com is a great place to start.
That is a great place because it is someplace you can find someone in anywhere that you are right now. You brought up something else earlier that I wanted to go back to, which just for me again, I'm having a hard time in my own life right now giving myself sexually. I'm kind of in this place where I feel very reserved and closed unless I really know somebody and feel like I can move forward. It's funny because I am part of the sex positive community and I really appreciate everything, but I think about some of our mutual friends and I haven't played with anyone. Like, I'm the one in the corner, like, I'll just watch. I'm just watching. Really? Okay, it's good. I we're all good here. And it's like very odd to me because I do think people look at me like, well, she can't be sex positive. I had a big, an uncomfortable experience with a very well-known radio person who's in sex who wanted me to take my top off on her show. And I was like, no. And she was like, well, you say you're sex positive. And I'm like, that doesn't mean I have to get naked. So anyway, there's like a few questions here, but one that I really was curious about earlier, because I ramble on as everybody, I know I get the comments, I should shut up more. I get it, but I'm so bad at that. How do you distinguish between sex and love? Like, how do you keep those things separated?
You know, I was having actually this discussion with a friend of mine the other day. I was raised mainly by my dad and my brother. My brother was a whole different reality, and he taught me from a very young age the difference between sex and love. And him and his friends, I spent a lot of time with them, and so I learned the categories that men put women in. I learned how they categorize women. I learned how they play with women, how they manipulate women, how they lie to women. And I watched it from a very, very, very young age. And so I learned very quickly there's a huge difference between sex and love. They actually really have nothing to do with one another. I've fucked a ton of people. I can't say that I've loved a good portion of them. But the people that I have loved, that I've had sex with, those are completely different sexual experiences. There's something completely different about them. But to me, like I said, sex is a release. It's almost like going to the gym. So that is not something I need to necessarily tie emotion to.
That's great. I need to learn that part. Because I tie a lot of my heart into any sort of, like, my experiences are almost uncomfortably intimate. It's the way, like, I want to connect when I get there. So you said your brother and his friends put people into categories. What are those?
Oh, so basically, let's see, when I was about 12... or 13, you know, around that time coming into adolescence, I remember my brother and his friends were like, you know, there are the women you fuck, there are the women you love, and then there are the women you're friends with who sometimes you sleep with, but you try not to. And, you know, and they had these categories. And mainly the one thing that I learned from all of them is that fidelity was almost nearly impossible. And I think that's why I had so much casual sex and I really didn't think that relationships would work. Now that I'm in a sex positive community and I realize that there's a way to be open without destroying another human being. That was what I think was the hardest, was when I realized that fidelity was just really not possible for many people. And I watched how all of these men throughout my life would just lie, and that's what they would do. And they were okay with that. And to me, I never wanted a relationship because I never wanted to be lied to. Whereas now in the relationships that I'm in, everybody knows about everybody. There is no lie. It's like everything's on the table. You know what you need to know about me. It's all up front and out there. If you're okay with it, you're okay with it. If you're not, that's fine. But it's never like 2 months down the road, I'm like, so I'm the slutty blogger. You know, it's no.
So that comes out pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. Well, it has to. I mean, it just...
It's fun to just say, if you Google slutty blogger, I'm the first name that comes up.
And I am! And then the funny thing, I remember this one guy I told that to, and then he Googled me, and he's like, I thought you were full of shit. He's like, and then I get on Google, and I'm like, holy shit.
That must get you a lot. I mean, it's so funny. I wonder, like, it must get you a lot of people coming to your site.
You know, it does, actually. It gets a lot of people coming to my site, but it's interesting, the people that stay versus the people that come for whatever. Because it's like some people come to my site and they're like, oh, it's a porn site. No, it's not a porn site. And then there are the people, a lot of my readers and most of the people on my website were there before the website was up. Because before it was WordPress, I just had a small WordPress blog. The website actually didn't come up until this year when I finally realized that I needed to have my own website.
Do you get naked on your site?
Not completely. I am topless. I have no problem showing my boobs. I don't think that that should be an issue. But as far as my genitalia is concerned, no, I don't allow
this. City's very crazy like that too. Like yeah. I had friends visiting a few weeks ago with their kids, and she called me from the Castro and was like, what the fuck? I just parked and there are three naked men sitting on a bench. Oh, and yeah. I'm like, I think you can be naked in this city.
You can.
As long as you bring a towel to sit on.
They're the naked dudes. They're cool. They hang out in the Castro. They have hats. They're great.
Can you be naked anywhere in the city?
I believe so. I believe you can be. You can't have sex in public.
And you can't sport a Woody if you have a Woody to sport.
Right. Like, unless it's Folsom Street Fair.
Then you can?
Have you been to Folsom Street
Fair? No, I haven't. This will be my first year.
Oh, you have to go.
Folsom Street. I think I'm going to have to tag along with you.
Yeah, Folsom Street Leather Fair is a whole different experience. That was also part of what started it. I'm like, if this is what happens in a Sunday morning, on a Sunday morning, every Sunday at September, I forget, 25th, and the leather BDSM community comes out in full form. Saw my first circle jerk that day.
Really? See, I haven't seen most of these things
yet.
Oh,
I saw some things and some stuff. I mean, dick was everywhere, and a lot of it was hard. So,
not hard, like, to look at, just hard.
No, just hard, yeah. I was like, well, alrighty.
So now you're working on a book, right?
I am. I took that year and essentially I'm turning it into a book where, you know, how blogs work in the sense that you get very short pieces of what's going on in someone's life. But there is a whole background. And I always tried to keep the blog positive. So I never really wanted people to know the negative things that were happening, like me getting fired, like the different things like that.
So you were, yes, that's earlier. You said there was backlash.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does your work, do you tell your work about your site?
Now, thank God, I work for myself. And so I've been able to do the writing thing. And then I am a paralegal, so I still do divorces on the side. If it's ain't love grand, that's what I used to say in family law. Ain't love grand.
Or at least it costs a grand.
It pays well. It's like family law is guaranteed income. I'm sorry, America, but it is.
It's true, 50%.
Send your kids to become family law attorneys. They will have work. But or paralegals. But yeah, I basically now do, if it's a really simple divorce and there's no haggling, there's no fighting, because I can't fight, I'm not a lawyer. But if you just need your shit distributed and, like, custody and things just allotted.
How fast can you get a divorce?
Well, from the time you file, it's 6 months until it's actually done. But your paperwork can be done very soon. And you want to get it done as soon as possible because it takes 3 months for them to review it, go through it, make sure you've signed and dotted everything, especially if there's kids, and then they'll sign it.
Okay.
So that's what's kept me afloat, being a paralegal and doing legal work.
But you said there was backlash when you started the site.
Basically when I became San Francisco Slutty's blogger and they found out, my employers found out, they fired me.
Okay, because that's when your name came out.
No, actually my name wasn't out. He figured it out. He went in and the pictures showed enough. I never showed my face completely, but it showed enough. And when they did the first article, it mentioned that I had a day job. And he just kind of just kept looking and kept looking and spent basically 3 days on a weekend. And then basically hacked into my computer to see if he could find my personal anything. And we had an internet policy where on your break you could check Facebook and you could whatever. And so then he eventually found my stats page.
Wow.
And so I walked in and he said, well, it's at will employment and I really don't have to give you a reason to fire you, but I will. I found your blog, and I think it's great that you have a good sex life. And the pictures were stellar. Turn in your keys. Here's your check. Get out.
Wow.
And I was like, oh. It was surreal. Completely, completely, completely surreal. And it took a little while for it to register, you know, like that it happened. And then, you know, we got involved in a legal battle because I filed for unemployment and he fought me on it. I mean, the man was just an unbelievable bastard, you know? I mean, it was pure shaming. Like, that's what I felt like. I'm like, you're not firing me because I'm bad at my job. You are firing me because I'm the slutty blogger. And essentially, you're shaming me for what I do in my personal life. Fuck you.
So it never made you stop and think I'm not going to do this.
Oh, of course it did. I mean, like, I wanted to die that day. I literally was like, oh my God, thank God my father's dead, because this would have killed him, you know? And essentially it just kind of, then I got mad. And then I was like, no, I've always questioned authority. I've always questioned society. And that's why I wanted to be an attorney to begin with. So now I'm going to push this as far as I'm going to go, just to spite you, you bastard. You know, it's like, not even in that way, but it's funny now, when they did the interview with the Huffington Post, they named him, his name's Daniel Conrad. And I'm like, well, now we can both be famous. I can be famous for being a slut, and you can be famous for firing a slutty blogger.
You haven't heard from him.
Oh, no. No, we don't really communicate.
And did you get unemployment?
Nope. I lost.
What did you lose for?
They couldn't definitively prove that I was never not doing the blog at work. Because since we had an open internet policy, they could never prove it. They never got a forensic person. But I couldn't definitively prove that I wasn't either. And basically when they came in, their entire defense was, well, we don't know, but we think she was. And P.S., they pulled every photo off my website of me and literally just did a slideshow. And that was it. And I was like, I've had fantasies about courtrooms. Those have not been it. But yeah, it was horrible. It was horrible.
Wow.
And so then I was like, this is ridiculous and this shouldn't happen. And this is happening in San Francisco. And essentially I'm being punished for having a sex life, and I'm being punished for questioning you and questioning your authority and firing me. And so, yes, I lost, but what I did gain was a different momentum and a different life path, because now my life belongs to me. And now I'm no longer afraid of people finding out what I do.
So I want to just talk about some of the stories. We mentioned the coffin one, and there actually was something on Facebook not too long ago. I forgot where it was out of, but this guy, his girlfriend he was going to marry did die, and he dressed her in a corpse bride in a wedding dress and married her like on a slab. And there were, he posted pictures of it on Facebook. It was pretty intense.
Wow.
Yeah. So, what was your most memorable experience in that year?
There were a lot. Let's see. What were the most memorable? There was a birthday foursome that was incredibly memorable. A friend of mine, we had all missed her birthday because she was in Thailand. And so when she came back with her boyfriend, she was like, I want a foursome for my birthday. And we had this like amazingly hot foursome at this house. And it was just great. It was one of those experiences that it was like, I did it because she's my friend and I liked all these people, but it turned out to be just hot, really, really hot. And then the best part is, after it was over, the person's house we were at, his roommate came home drunk and demanded to come in to say hi. And I remember we're all naked. We had like pillows over us and I'm like, hi, nice to meet you.
And didn't become a birthday fivesome?
No, it didn't. We were done with that part of the evening, but it was like, oh, okay, hello. There was that one, and then I think the Easter orgy at kink.com.
What's that?
They had the Easter orgy at the sex castle, which is what I call the armory, and that was the first time I'd been there where it wasn't a BDSM party. It was just a straight orgy that they called Eyes Wide Fucked. And I used to compare that place to Eyes Wide Shut all the time. Like, watch Eyes Wide Shut. That's what I go to on Saturday nights. And this one, it was just, it was hot. It was one of the first times I had sex at the armory. Not on camera, but eventually once the cameras were off. But it was just, people were everywhere. It was just a great, really just hot orgy scene of like the best kind. Because you're in a castle and you're on this upper floor and there's all these tapestries and carpets and chairs and paintings, and it, you know, you always feel like you're in the Roman Empire over there.
Oh, know? Yeah.
All that's missing are lions and Christians, pretty much.
Caligula.
You know? Yeah. But it's like, that's how I felt. And so when I was there, I was like, this is my life. This is my life.
How do you get invited? Can anyone go to the armory on Saturday night?
No, the armory found me again. I went to Peter Acker's 40th birthday party. I was someone's guest and I wrote it up, and their viewers found me and emailed them and said, who's this girl that goes to your parties? And they're like, we don't know. And so then they looked it up and they looked me up, and basically they said, we would like to let you write about whatever you want to. So they opened the doors, which is not something they do there.
Wow.
And they let me go to every website I wanted to go to, interview the directors, interview the people that make porn, because at that time I didn't know anything about porn or porn stars or anything. So they just said, do what you want. And so I did. And so the Armory was great. Like I do love kink.com. They're great.
They are great. And they offer a really large variety of sexual acts that you can't find anywhere else.
Right. They do. You know, you can find pretty much whatever you're into, if it's BDSM wise, on that site, from Wired Pussy to Public Disgrace, you know? And so I had never looked at their website. Part of what I did is I wouldn't look at the stuff that I was going to do purposely.
Yeah.
And so when I went to my first Public Disgrace, I didn't know what it was. I got an invitation to a formal dinner.
And what is the Public Disgrace?
Public Disgrace is a consensual gangbang. And so the dinner was, it was a 4-course meal where this girl gets gangbanged during it. And so I'm like, what?
Is everyone at the table supposed to participate?
Yeah. When you're invited, that's the whole point, is that everyone who's invited is an extra. And so there's limits on what you can do to her. And so all of a sudden, I just remember sitting down, and then I'm like, what? What's going to happen? And then there was just this full gangbang during a 4-course meal, which the meal was delicious, let me just say.
Was it heaven food?
No, it was great. Danny Lopez, the chef who is a chef in San Francisco, he's great. He did this butternut squash soup and like this meat course. And then during the electricity part of it, when they were electrocuting her and I couldn't watch, I went to the kitchen and he showed me how to make bananas Foster. I love the Armory.
I know they do tours and stuff
Yes, for folks that actually want to see it, you can always take a guided tour. I think they're on Fridays, but if you just go to their website, you can take a tour for like $20. I highly recommend the tour. I've taken the tour. I got more ass off that tour than I can tell you.
So you said they also allowed you to talk with all of their stars and directors.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I saw that you just did an interview with Nina Hartley as well on the HuffPo.
Mm-hmm.
What star has really, I am always defending a large portion of pornography because I do think there's a good community making quality,
yes,
consensual things, yes, that really turn them on. So was there someone that really inspired or enlightened you in the adult industry up here?
Chloe Camellia. That was the first girl that I ever had interviewed. And she was the girl whose Public Disgrace I went to. She was the perfect person. She is pretty much a little genius. She speaks about 3 different languages. She got a full ride to college. And she likes to do sex work. And there's nothing wrong with her. There's nothing damaged about her. There's no drug addiction. She just likes what she does. And then on top of it, she's a political activist. She does all this great charity work. She does all these amazing things. And so that was, you know, because in the beginning, when I had nothing to go by, I had no idea who these girls were and what their story was. And what I found is that pornography is filled with a lot of very empowered, very intelligent women who like what they do and choose to do it for a reason. But she was perfect to start with because it just set the tone. And after that, I was like, oh, I want to meet some more of these women. You know, I just did a piece on Simone Jude, who's doing a documentary, Public Sex, Private Lives, which follows 3 porn stars who've been in the industry for more than 10 years. And it's to basically humanize the porn performer, because for whatever reason, they're not humanized. And a lot of people look at them and don't even see people anymore. It's just a sexual object that they don't think has brains or feelings or anything. And these are people, you know?
Well, it reminds me, too, that humanize the sex worker, humanize the slut, you know? It's like, mm-hmm, when you put sex in, when you start to see someone through a lens of sex, I think a lot of times people are dehumanized.
Yep.
And, I mean, you must at some point, too, have gotten backlash from family. Maybe not.
Oh, friends, actually.
Friends.
Family was actually pretty cool. I was shocked, actually, at how cool the family was. More friends, people I'd known for many years, who were like, what? You know? And thank God it wasn't that many. The ones that did, I was very surprised. And it was more along the lines of, so this is how you live your life, and they just didn't understand. And so it just became, we just can't be friends anymore because I don't understand your life. And it's a fear-based reaction. People are afraid of what they don't understand and they don't want it to harm their lives. I had a girl who I went to college with, and I remember when the blog started, she asked to be taken off like all email lists, defriend on Facebook, the whole nine yards. And then before the year was almost up, she sent me an email and she said, you know, I want to apologize because in the beginning I really didn't know what to do with this. And I was It was overwhelming. And she said, and then when I read it and I realized that it was my issue, it really had nothing to do with you. And she said, and then I realized that it wasn't just sex you were writing about. It was the world and changing the world and our perceptions and our stereotypes. And we used to call each other Pearl in college. And she's like, you're trying to make the world a better place, Pearl. And I was like, yep. And so it's been nice. There's some people who have come back, but there have been others that I just, and it's fine. There's no ill will, but yeah, that was a hard one. There are some people that I knew for a long time that were just like, what?
Yeah.
What?
So is that what you feel? Your book is going to be about these experiences, but is it also going to be a sort of, are there lessons to be learned throughout
the book? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I learned my lessons, you know, they're from getting fired to trying to figure out a new career to being suddenly going from, I used to always say when I worked in a law office, I want people to listen to me and not look at me. And it did the polar opposite. All of a sudden people looked at me and then listened to me. And so it was just learning, you know, how to be professional and still look like a woman and not desexualize yourself, because clearly you can't be sexual and be smart. You know, that's just not possible. So now I have a balance, you know, when I present, and even in a business sense, I still look like a girl. You know, I don't hide that anymore. I don't put my hair up. I don't completely cover up. I mean, I don't go in latex either, but there's a happy medium. And I think that women are forced to make that concession in the professional world, where suddenly you don't want to look like a girl anymore, because then you're not taken seriously. And you don't get that promotion.
You and I both do have these deep voices. We were talking about it when we were testing out the microphones. Right. And to be a girl, a lot of times there's that still that high-pitched voice that comes along with it. And to be, you know, I mean, I don't know. There is something very powerful in the voice, too. And you have a very powerful voice, both in writing and in person.
Thank you.
So what is next? You're going to keep blogging. You're going to get this book out. And
I'm going to get this
book out.
You
travel, you say, once a month for work?
Yeah, now what I'm doing is I'm started traveling the United States to see what the sexual communities are everywhere. And so now, essentially, I'm going to write a second book at some point about the travels. I'm not quite sure.
Where have you gone so far?
Gone to San Diego. I've gone to Long Beach. I've gone to Las Vegas. I'm going to be going to D.C. at the end of the month. Going to New Orleans.
Oh, we'll both be at, are you going to Momentum?
Yeah, I'm going to Momentum.
Okay, I will be there too.
Oh, good. Going to D.C. and then I'm going to New Orleans in July for Naughty in New Orleans, which is a lifestyle thing that happens every year. So I try to go to sexual events in order to bring out sex positivity and to just display that it's not just San Francisco. It's not just this bubble where these people are free sexually. It's actually everywhere. It's just not as talked about. And, you know,
I met a wonderful woman who is a cultural anthropologist, and she said that she believes that the sex revolution that's happening now is larger than the one in the 60s and 70s. It's just still a little more underground. I mean, even when it comes out, like I'm friendly, very good friends in our industry with Jaya, who's a wonderful sex educator. She's poly. She lives with her two partners and their baby. And, you know, Good Morning America did a piece on her, but they still look at it as like, lady lives with two men, you know, as opposed to like, this family gets along and look at this alternative option.
Exactly.
Because you're right. You were talking earlier about men, about really, I mean, it's not just men cheating, although there was a study recently that came out. I read it in The Guardian, I think. Men cheat, you know, women have to deal with it. But it's also a lack of communication. And I think what you're doing is bringing out a way to open up a dialogue for anyone about how to live the life you want to live and be okay with the fact that, yeah, I say I'm monogamish. I'm not monogamous. I can't imagine being with one person for the rest of my life without having the opportunity to explore other individuals and other experiences.
Well, and openness isn't for everyone. I mean, I think essentially I just want people to be open with their sexuality, whatever that is.
And accepting.
Yeah, and accepting of it and being okay with it and not feeling it's this dirty little secret, you know, that we have to hide. But I think that going back to your point about the sexual revolution, I think it's part of the reason that it's bigger is because it's more organized and it's done differently. You know, these are all a lot of very educated people who are trying to display a community. You know, it's not just about the sex. That's a part of it, but it's really not about that. It's about community, and it's about dialogue, and it's about being open and honest and being okay with yourself and others. And I think that that's important, not just in sex, but in everything.
Absolutely. And I think it's the point what you brought up earlier, Vanessa. It's not that you have to be open in a relationship, because honestly, I am, like I said, monogamish, which makes me mostly monogamous. But it's about being open with yourself about what your needs and desires are, and being open with your partner about what they are. And not one, no one person can fulfill everything.
No.
I'm not even just talking about sex for one, for anyone else.
Right.
We can't fulfill everything for ourselves. So it's just about figuring out what you need to explore and going on that journey. And, you know, your journey is started with a bang, and it's about to, you know, continue, like literally a bang and a bang. And so now who knows where it will go, but I'm really glad that we have finally met.
Yes, me too.
So you can check out Vanessa Pinto at Fleur de Lis, that's LISSF.com. And also you can follow her on Twitter and on Facebook, Fleur de Lis. Search Slutty Blogger and she's going to come up. If you search Slutty Blogger, I'm not going to come up at all, most likely. I don't even know what you can search to find me. So just find me on Twitter or Facebook. It's JAMYE on Twitter, and just add Waxman, WAXMAN. I'll be back again next week with another Hot Socks podcast. Until then, I'd encourage you to have a conversation with yourself or your partner this week, and figure out what turns you on and what would you like to see. And if you get to SF, I think everyone should see the armory. I need to get there.
Yes, I think everyone should see the armory. It's a place to see.
Well, I look forward to continuing reading you on the HuffPo. And that's your, thank you. Are you under Vanessa Pinto on the Huffington Post?
Yes, Vanessa Pinto under the Huffington Post and SF Weekly. Unless it's my blog, you'll always find me under Vanessa Pinto.
Fantastic. Thanks for listening. Bye.